Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, dass du da bist. Ich hoffe, es geht dir gut. Ich hoffe, dass du gerade gut durch diese verrückte Zeit kommst, in der wir sind, und dass du diese Zeit wirklich auch für dich nutzen kannst, um in dir, in deiner inneren Welt, die Kraft und die Gewissheit und das Vertrauen aufbauen kannst, dass es jetzt gerade einfach braucht in dieser Zeit, um da gut durchzukommen und sich nicht verrückt machen zu lassen, sondern dich weiterhin auf das zu fokussieren, was für dich wichtig ist, und diese Zeit gerade auch zu nutzen, um ja, in dein eigenes Wachstum zu kommen und festzustellen, wer man eigentlich ist, wenn so viel im Außen wegbricht, und immer mehr sich mit seiner eigenen Essenz zu verbinden. Und zu diesem Thema habe ich heute auch einen ganz tollen Interviewgast. Und zwar ist es die wundervolle Anna Lynn McCord, die ich in Los Angeles getroffen habe. Und Anna Lynn ist amerikanische Schauspielerin, sie ist Aktivistin und Präsidentin der Organisation Together One Heart, die sich gegen Menschenhandel einsetzt. Und sie ist da sehr, sehr, sehr engagiert, um sich dafür einzusetzen, dass vor allen Dingen der Sexhandel von Kindern aufhört auf der Welt. Und der Grund, warum sie sich da unter anderem so viel einsetzt, ist, dass sie sagt, dass wir alle, jeder Einzelne auf seine eigene Art und Weise, dieses eigene gefangene Kind auch in sich trägt, dieses ungeheilte, verletzte Kind, das wir alle in uns haben. Und solange wir auch unsere inneren Kinder nicht heilen, solange wird es wahrscheinlich auch immer Gewalt geben gegen Kinder überall auf der Welt. Und es ist ein unglaublich inspirierendes Gespräch mit Anna Lynn McCord, die in ihrer eigenen Kindheit auch sexuelle Gewalt erlebt hat. Und in diesem Gespräch spreche ich mit Anna Lynn darüber, warum Heilung von unserem Kind so wichtig und elementar ist, was häufig wirklich hinter unseren Zielen steckt und was eigentlich nicht, warum es so wichtig ist, dass wir alle unsere Emotionen fühlen und wie wir auch achtsamer mit unseren Gefühlen umgehen können, und wie wir uns mit unserem zukünftigen Ich verbinden können, um uns ein erfülltes Leben zu erschaffen. Und dieses Interview ist, ja, es ist so tiefgründig und ehrlich, und Anna Lynn ist einfach auch so ein herzlicher, wundervoller Mensch, wo es so schön ist zu sehen, wie jemand seine eigene Geschichte, wie sie sie für sich nutzt und nicht gegen sich, und wie sie darin Kraft findet. Und ja, sie arbeitet auch noch an sich, und das ist auch, wie kein von uns hört das ja irgendwann mal auf, und das ist ja auch gut so, aber es ist einfach so schön zu sehen, wie sie da mittlerweile ganz positiv mit umgeht und wie sie ihren eigenen Schmerz transformiert hat, um die Welt zu einem besseren Ort zu machen. Und ich hoffe sehr, dass diese Folge dich auch inspirieren wird und dass du sie, wenn sie dir hilft, wenn du was daraus mitnehmen konntest, teile sie gerne auf deinen Kanälen, gib sie weiter an die Menschen, die du liebst. Und du findest mittlerweile fast alle Podcast-Folgen, also die meisten, die vor allen Dingen auch die Interview-Folgen sind, auf YouTube als Videos. Das heißt, wenn du gerne den Podcast auch als Video anschauen möchtest, findest du das gesamte Video auch auf YouTube und auf meinem Blog, wo ich mich natürlich auch freue, wenn du mir in den Kommentaren Gedanken dalässt, wie die Folge dir gefallen hat, und natürlich wie immer auch, wenn wir uns danach bei Instagram sehen, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und du mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge dalässt. Und ich hoffe jetzt einfach, dass es dir gut geht, und wünsche dir ganz, ganz, ganz viel Freude mit dieser Podcast-Folge, wie du dein inneres Kind heilen kannst.
So excited and grateful to be here with Anna Lynn McCord in beautiful Beverly Hills in your place. I'm really, really excited to talk to you today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, or thank you for coming over and traveling all this way to see me.
Yeah,
my
amazing.
Friends don't want to travel from West Hollywood. They came from Germany. So.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to talk to you because I found you on Instagram, and I was going through your feed, and I was like, it's amazing what she's doing. And first I really had to figure out like what you're doing, and then what I figured out, but you can correct me, is you've been an actress, and then you became really into anti-human trafficking. Yeah. And now today you're the president of an anti-human trafficking organization, Together One Heart.
That's correct.
And you traveled to Cambodia, and your heart mission is to end human trafficking.
Yes.
and
yes,
slavery of young women and children.
I'm a big dreamer, yeah. And so far I've made my dreams come true, and I continue to keep doing that.
It's amazing.
I grew up in a trailer park in a little tiny town, like no money, like, you know, poor kid who had this big dream to come to Hollywood and be an actress. And everybody said, that's never going to happen. And I was like, you just watch. Everyone's like, what's your plan B? What's your backup plan? And I was like, my plan B is that plan A never fails. I'm making plan A happen. And that's how I feel about this. Everyone's like, well, there's just, it's such a big issue and it's global. And I'm like, uh-huh. And? Yeah. Yes, and? And what do we do about it? There's 7.6 billion of us. There's 40.3 million slaves. We've got the numbers in our favor. We just have to band together. We have to unite, and we have to see the fight to end slavery as a personal responsibility. And it begins within. It begins with changing the concept. Slavery is an idea, right? Mm. So you, in order to change an idea, which never really happens, you just create a better one so they forget the old idea. So we think that freedom is a better idea. And that's what Together One Heart, you know, obviously does on the physical level. But the way that we treat our girls, like the treatment process, it's all about healing from within. It's all about, we do mind-body integration. We have art therapy, so the girls learn acting and singing and dancing, and it's wonderful. They do performances, and it's so beautiful because they put their whole self into that process, because when you deal with severe trauma, sometimes you can't find the words.
Yeah.
So we find other ways for them to express. And then we obviously have psychologists and psychiatrists and all of the appropriate, you know, medical treatment for our girls. But the biggest part of honestly, the biggest part of their growth, and we call it, instead of PTSD, we call it PTG, post-traumatic growth.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right? That's really just the steps that they take to find love and forgiveness.
It's amazing.
Very simple. Very simple. Not always easy to apply. It's hard for us. We're taught, especially in the Western world, we're taught to get angry and get mad. And in the Asian cultures, where human trafficking is predominantly in Asia, it's in every country of the world, but there is definitely an epicenter, and it is, in fact, you know, very much Asia. Whether it's, you know, the major issues of sex trafficking, more specifically in Southeast Asia, in every country of the world, but a lot in Southeast Asia, human labor, obviously in the more northern countries in Asia, but again, in every country of the world. So this kind of, this idea that we can take a sense of personal responsibility sounds like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? How am I responsible? I would never hurt a kid. I would never put a kid in slavery. Like, okay, but haven't you put a child in slavery before? Is the child inside yourself, the inner child? Do you allow her to be free?
Hmm.
Do you allow him to be free? Is he getting to do all the things he wishes, or does someone look at him and disapprove of him and he shuts down? Mm-hmm. And does someone look at her and tell her she's not pretty enough, she's not smart enough, she's not this, and she believes it? Mm-hmm. So maybe you have enslaved a child, and maybe you are the key to freedom mm-hmm. for the children around the world. That's what personal responsibility in this particular issue for me is about, and it started with my own life, because I was going around fighting slavery and trying to save everybody else, and I hadn't saved myself. And that was the kind of the internal journey that took place as a result, was because I was this, you know, I was working with former slaves, and I was this, you know, I was from America. I was from the country of freedom, and I'm walking around in a prison in my own mind.
I think we need to go back first, because I really want to go deep into this. So you said you grew up in a trailer park.
Yes.
The podcast is mainly listened in Germany, so we don't have trailer parks. So can you explain to everyone
happy for you.
who doesn't know what I mean? I think we don't have it in the way it is here in the States. So
yes.
How is it growing up in a trailer park? What was your experience?
So growing up in that setting is you have a very clear understanding that most people have real houses,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
and you have this sort of a house. It has bedrooms, it has walls, it has a roof. You're okay. You're technically, well, safe is a strong word from my childhood, but you're technically, you know, safe from the elements, right? Mm. But it's perceived in society as, oh, I'm sorry, you have a, you know, you're in poverty. Like you, so you feel that there's something wrong with you when you compare yourself to someone else. And the way we do that, and the way we see that measurement in the world on the outside, external, you know, kind of measuring stick of life and quote unquote success. So in a trailer park, it's, you're still making ends meet. You're still making, like, you have birthday parties and maybe they cost $20 versus 200 or 2000 or 20,000 with some of these like sweet 16 parties you see on television. But you still have happiness and joy in these moments. It's just, you're very aware that you're not like everybody else.
Okay.
And I didn't care. I was like, I can be just as famous, just as rich, just as whatever. And there is a little bit of the American dream in there. Mm-hmm. And for that purpose, I do, you know, I'm thankful that is a part of the narrative of my country, but it has done a lot of harm as well as doing a lot of good. Mm-hmm. It's given little girls like me the chance to dream, and I'm grateful for that side of it. But it's also told a story that my dream coming true would make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not make me happy.
Mm.
In fact, it highlighted how unhappy I really was. Mm. And that's the dark side of the American dream. That's the side that we don't talk about and we don't want the world to know.
Let's go into this, because I think this is something I really want to highlight, because this is something where I think like personal development and spiritual growth comes in, and it's so important, because like the American dream, it's outside, right?
Yes.
It's like when you become a famous actress, when you will be on the red carpet, when you have that, then you will feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
And it's not happening.
It's a lie.
So you actually, you came to LA, you became an actress.
No.
You lived it. And you just said,
I was miserable.
You were miserable.
I was miserable.
Take me to a day when you realized that dream you were dreaming was actually not giving you what you want to have.
Okay, I'll take you to the exact day.
Okay.
I was being offered 90210.
Mm-hmm.
And I had decided that I didn't want to be an actress anymore.
So this is an episodic
series.
Yeah.
And I was doing a film, and I had read this film about anti-human trafficking.
Okay.
And I was so touched by it. I sat down with the directors. I was like, you know, we were in the loop on it. Like this was what I wanted to do when I signed up to be an actress. This character was powerful. She was dark. She was wounded, but she was going to help these kids. And I mean, there were so many, and she finds out that she's one of these kids, and like her whole story. It's like, it was an unbelievably beautifully written script. And the writer's strike happened, which basically is when any strike, you know, like the Writers Guild said, we're not getting paid enough. The contracts are being changed because of digital and all of these different things. So they said, we're shutting down. Writers can't write anything. And we were in the middle of rewrites.
Oh, no.
So the film got shelved, lost all its money. And I was doing a film that was like just a comedy. It was silly and funny. And we need all of that. We need escapisms for sure. But it was like, this is the movie that's getting made. And that film was so important, and it's not going to happen now. And I was just, my soul just felt crushed. It had been building this feeling of just unhappiness, lack of fulfillment. Everybody's telling me how lucky I am and how, oh my God, you have the life. And I'm like, you don't even see me at all. I'm literally invisible. I wanted to be an actress so that people would actually see me, because I felt invisible as a kid. I felt like no one ever saw me.
Wow.
And now I've done the thing where everybody can see me now. And I still was so unseen, because they didn't see my pain. And they saw the facade. Yeah. They saw the mask. And I wore the mask well. Mm. I smiled through it all. I sold the story. that they were telling, that I was this happy little starlet, and I was cutting my wrists. I was suicidal. I was self-harming. I was in very toxic relationships that were sexually abusive, and the men didn't want to do it. I would push them to hurt me. I'd be like, oh, okay, well, what are you, just not into this sort of thing. Oh, I would like provoke. I would do all this stuff to get them to do harmful things to me. So like I, you know, Ashley Judd, I think, is the one who says trauma that is not transformed will become trauma transferred. Yeah. I was transferring trauma onto other people because I was in so much pain.
Yeah, hurt people.
And so this moment happened in my life, and I'm like, everything's come to the forefront. I'm doing this comedy. I've just been told that this film that I love is not going to happen. I didn't even want to go on the audition for 90210, which everyone was just like, oh my God, 90210, this is huge. And I'm like, I don't want to do it. Yeah. My agents are like, it's the strike. Nothing's happening. Just go on the meeting. And they end up wanting me to do the show. And I was like, see, I told you. Like, just such a little arrogant little brat. Just totally a brat. And I remember I was sitting in the trailer on my film. And I had just been in the makeup chair. And I'm listening to all this talk. And there's like, oh my God, you didn't get like $50,000 for your appearance, you need to talk to my manager, because my manager is amazing. She would never let you leave the house for less than 35 grand. And there are these conversations that are happening, and these are real conversations, and they really, and I'm just like, just drowning. Like, it's, everything's just becoming slow motion. I'm like, whoa, what have I done with my life? Like, this is not it for me. This cannot be it for me. And I actually called my very good friend, who was raised by German grandparents, actually.
Yeah.
So we found out like 10 years into our relationship that we both speak a little German, and we're like, what? We're like,
we have a secret language you can talk in.
Literally, yeah. Like, literally, we're like, ich muss ein Glas Wasser bitte. Like, this doesn't help our relationship, but also can I have some water? But yeah, so we were acting partners when I studied acting in New York.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I was at a dinner one night, and she had taken me, and someone was telling the story of this little girl in Thailand and about sex trafficking. I'd never heard of this thing. I was 17 years old. I was barely breaking even in New York financially, so I really wasn't trying to help anyone but myself. I was just trying to eat. But the story stayed with me forever. So when the movie came up, it brought all those feelings about that story.
Well, then, what kind of story was there? What was she telling
you? She was
about
6 years old, and my friend Jessica, who had introduced me to her friend with this organization, he was telling the story.
Okay.
And they had gone to do a documentary, and he went in as a John. He went into the brothel pretending to be a guy who wanted to meet younger girls to get the video on it. So it was very dangerous what he was doing. And this was early days. This was like 2000 and... I dare say it was like 2003, 2004, if not earlier, that the story took place. He was telling it to me, I think maybe in 2005. Mm. And nobody was talking about this issue. This was just not something that anyone was saying. And he had gone in, and this little girl was like 6 years old, and when she came in to be with him in the room, and they closed the door, he's like, I'm not gonna hurt you, this is not... And when he went to leave, because he got the footage of, like, proof that this was happening, she reached for him to take her with him. And he had to leave her because his entire operation could be killed, like, all this.
Yeah.
And he had to leave this little girl. I know, I feel the same way. And so I'm listening to this story, and I'm 17 years old, and I'm like, you know, I am a selfish little teenager who's trying to survive. But... in so many ways, that little girl, that unseen little girl, was me. This invisible little girl who everybody looks past and everybody leaves behind. And he named his organization Tiny Stars because she was his tiny star, and he could never get past that he had to leave her.
Oh.
And I called Jessica, and I was like, I'm coming back to New York. I don't want to be in LA anymore. I don't like these people. Like, I'm having an existential crisis and I'm going to work at Starbucks and find a new passion because I'm done with this town. And I'm like, it's done. I'm out. Like, and she's like, you're an idiot. And she'll tell you every single time. She's like, I never called you an idiot. But like, in my mind, she was calling me out. So my go-to is like, idiot, get your shit together. Oops, sorry. But
no problem.
So she basically is like, you have such a huge opportunity. You have such a platform. These organizations where no one knows about these issues, you can talk about them, you can tell people. And yeah. I was like, what do? I don't even know where to start. And she and I actually, next month will be our 10-year anniversary of going to Cambodia together.
Wow.
She started educating me on the issue. I took 90210 and I was like, whatever we do, I want to be able to talk about this organization and this issue. And my publicist is like, okay, whatever, do the show. And they're all happy I'm doing the show. And I'm like, you know, trying to just eat up the information. I'm educating myself and I'm like learning that this is such a widespread issue and nobody knows about it. And I'm getting more and more fueled by this like rage of these invisible children, just like me. Once again, relating it back, this is that personal responsibility that my awareness hadn't come into the, you know, I hadn't been able to see that yet. But so very long decade of this story being an ongoing, you know, thing. I come into this awareness through the process of getting on that plane and the concept that you have in your mind when you've never experienced like this kind of world and you're being brought into this new world. I think I'm going to Cambodia and I'm going to help all these little children because I'm such a good person and I'm doing this work. And that is not what happened.
No.
They changed my life. They turned my world upside down. They are my heroes. They are my babies. They are my teachers. They are my sages. They are the greatest gift I've ever been given on this planet because they gave me my life back. They taught me what love was. They loved me with no reason. They did not need to love me. And I didn't feel like I deserved their love because I never felt worthy of love. And they just loved me anyway. And they weren't these sad, hurting little girls. They're dancing and playing and they're like, Bongsnai Anna, we love you, Bongsnai Anna. You play with us. You keep us in your heart. We miss you in our hearts. And I'm like, ah! I'm like, I don't know what to do with all of this love. It's just too much. I can't take it. And I'd go home and I would need to like, I'd want to sleep for a week. It was overwhelming in a way. I didn't know what to do with it. Love was such a dangerous thing for me. And they kept showing me that it was safe. And I, piece by piece, year by year, trip by trip, I was just, parts of that shell was breaking off and I was finding my way. And I kind of talk about how my love has transformed over the years. And it's a return to love because we start out as love and we return if we receive the invitation and accept. But what happened was I started with this intense love to just like, help everybody, which was this projection love, right? Projecting it outside of myself. And then it started to turn inward into this healing love where their love was healing me. And it was also educating me that this is something I could really have in my life. I could have love in my life and it could be safe. And now it's a storm. Now it's a love storm because I'm just like, there's no question now. I am love. I'm very intense. I'm not a passive person. You can see my energy. I've always been a storm, but now the storm is made of love and we rain little hearts. but this all came from this massive, you know, like internal storm. There's no other word for it, but like journey that was going on inside of me that was this itching, scratching of like, trying to find a way out, this little child that I had enslaved. And I am a fighter and she's a fighter. I got my fightingness from my little self. I've always been a vocal kid. Like I'd get in trouble all the time and I didn't care because I had to say what I wanted to say. And I pushed that little girl down so much. And it was just like when I was suddenly with kids, getting to be a kid again, the scratching began and it was like, I'm coming out. I want out. I want freedom. I want to be free. And it led me to getting to a place where so much of the work was done. I found meditation. I found Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements. I found Eckhart Tolle, Power of Now and New Earth. I have I'm a little bit obsessive with my authors. So now that we've met and connected, I'm going to have to watch everything you've ever videoed, every podcast you've ever done. I'll post it. If you write books, I'll have to read every, I'm like, if I like a dress, I buy it in every color. Like, I'm a little extreme, the storm, but I read Four Agreements and then I read every Don Miguel Ruiz book. I read Eckhart Tolle and then everything of his. So I've gone down the list of these authors who have just been my teachers. Dr. Yeah. Dan Siegel is an incredible neuroscientist and MD who writes about, he calls it Mindsight. And
I read the book.
You read Mindsight? Yeah. Okay, so yeah, we're on That's the same amazing. Page. You yeah. get it. But I've read every book from him, and I got to meet him, and I was like totally like, I was like, I just want you to know, I have been playing this very cool, but I am fangirling right now. And he's like, well, you weren't playing it that cool because you quoted about 10 of my books. I was like, ah, shit. but so all of these books became my friends. They became my teachers. They yeah. became my mothers and fathers and these voices in my head to replace the voices that had been in my head for so long, telling me how unlovable I was, how unworthy I was, and how gross. Like, I felt really gross about myself. I had these sexual things that I was attracted to that I would push these guys to doing with me. And then I would feel shame because I didn't know why I liked them and what was wrong with me. And then there was just this vicious cycle. And suddenly those shameful voices started to just die out. Mm. And those beautiful voices that gave me hope started to be the louder voices. And then the silence, the Eckhart Tolle's definition of a mind gap became such a visual in my mind, and I'm a very visual person. And I was able to see, like, my crazy intrusive thoughts going, did I get the cheese that I wanted to get to? Oh, I have to order that pizza. Did I call my, like, please stop, leave me alone. And when he described silence in the mind as a mind gap, I was like, wait, I want mind gaps. Mind gap sounds amazing. And I started to notice, I started to compete with myself. It was like a competition of like, how many mind gaps can I have during one day? And I'd like tried it. And now I'm so grateful over the years of creating these new neural pathways in my brain and new neural networks that it's just blank. there's nothing going on. Literally, like, people, they have peace. A little, you know, it's just peace. Yeah. It's just silence. And then what's really beautiful about that is that's when the magic happens. Because then it's like, look at your DM messages. And I'm not always good at I'm not the best at social. And I was being pushed to look at my DMs. And there was a message from you. And like little things like that, where it's just a connection happens and you don't know what it's going to be. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm absentmindedly going on Instagram. Or am I? I hear these little... Turn down that street. I don't drive down that street normally. Oh, there's a coffee shop. I'll stop at the coffee shop. Run into someone I haven't seen in 10 years. Like, oh, and that person's doing something that I'm doing. And like the magic has started. And I didn't believe in this because I believed in science. I believed that you make your life the way it's supposed to be. I dreamed of being an actress and I was going to forge ahead and push. And no one, I was ruthless and da 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 da. And so this has flipped my world upside down. And it has brought me to a place where I realize that there is a little small part that I'm leaving out, which is not small at all, but the full kind of spectrum of the story builds up to about 16 months ago. And this was the point where everything in my whole world. I thought my world had turned upside down. I think my world's just been shaking like one of those little, you know, those, what are the little snow globes that you shake in the snow? That I'm the snow and I'm in the hands of a child and something's shaking me fiercely. And I'm like, this is my world, like for literally my whole life. But so once again, it's time to be shaken up. And it was August of 2018. And I had started to undergo a treatment called EMDR. And it's a PTSD treatment that is remarkable for anyone dealing with PTSD. It's the number one treatment that the United States government uses for our war veterans, which I would prefer that they just didn't have war veterans because we didn't have war. But since that's a thing, the way that they treat them is with EMDR. And that is, it has become very popular for the treatment of domestic and sexual abuse. Mm. And it is really powerful. And it's very, you determine the speed of your healing. Mm. How deep you want to go, how far, and
what is it, what is EMDR? Abbreviation? What is
it? Means eye movement.
That's with the eyes, though.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. Okay, yeah. So basically, our memories are connected to our eye movement. Yeah. You know how in sleep you have REM? Yeah. So all of that is what they do by altering the eye movement and taking control of it. You can detach the memory from the eye movement and you start to have control. So it's a bilateral temporal lobe activation that occurs. And then you go into a memory that's kind of, we all have these memories that flash, right? Throughout our lives that come up.
Yeah.
And we tend to, if we're honest and or if we can feel ourselves in those moments, we'll notice that it feels a little icky or it feels a little uncomfortable. It's something that comes up when there's a negative moment outside of us that's now created a negative moment inside and then we see something. Those are the memories to pay attention to. Those are the memories that in neuroscience are described as implicit memories, typically. Mm. So they typically, you might have the explicit memory, which is the meaning that it's grabbed on. It's in your hippocampus. It's long-term memory. But implicit memories might be surrounding it, right? So, and those are memories that are kind of like if you imagine a big room and a feather is floating and then someone turns on a vacuum cleaner and that feather goes... That's what happens in a trigger moment. And it's like, and you don't know where you are, and you could be in any time, in any place. Everything feels like it's happening now. And that's what panic attacks are derived from. And this is all, and there's an incredible author who can be on your podcast sometime because he's amazing. But he's a neuroscientist in England, and his book is called, he has a couple books, but the book that I'm referring to is called The Invisible Lion. Mm. And he talks about the fact that our nervous systems, everything starts and ends with our nervous system, right? It's regulation or dysregulation of the nervous system. So that panic coming on is, there's an invisible lion we're being chased by.
Yeah.
No one can see it but us, but it's real and we feel it and our body reacts to it. And that's that it's trapped survival instinct in our cells. And in the wild, in the Serengeti, the gazelle, if she gets away from the lion,
she survives.
She survives and she gets rid of the energy. Yeah, they do shakes. Trauma dances. Yeah. They do shake dances, right? Yeah. We don't do that. We freeze, we lock up, we hold it inside, we push it down. We say, don't cry, don't feel. We say, don't feel. We take a pill. We do anything. Our brain says, I'm going to have a glass of wine. And we think it's our idea. Mm. It's not, I love wine. Don't get me wrong.
but I know what you mean.
The body is saying, I say the body sends a text message to the brain. It's like, hey, I'm not feeling good right now.
Do something.
Have a glass of wine. Yeah. And then my brain's like, I think I'll have a glass of wine. Yes, let's have wine. Let's go buy a new dress. And we're trying to just calm our internal experience because the storm is brewing and we don't want a storm. We don't want a storm. No, 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 no storm, no storm, no storm. But in the middle of the storm is the eye. Mm. And it's still, and it's calm, and it's beautiful. And you can be inside of a storm, and everything's perfect, and the sun is shining.
Yeah.
And that's what changed my life. So when my memories in this experience were activated when we did our first treatment, I did two intake sessions. That was all it took. And one processing, and my memories, the bubble popped. I was so ready to get this dark cloud out of my story and out of my life. My brain wanted to heal. The way our bodies, if you get cut and the body, you don't have to be like, okay, blood coagulate, okay, scab over, okay, new skin form. The body wants to heal.
Yeah.
The brain wants to heal. It's a part of the body. And we just don't trust it because we need to narrate. We have to tell the story. But so what happened for me was I had this memory. We go in and the bubble bursts. And I remember just all this impressionistic feelings, sensations inside my body, like burning, painful sensations in my genital area, and all of these flashes.
How old were you in that memory?
at that, like, the what I've come to find out through bursting all the bubbles is that it starts around 4 or 5 years old. I think 5 was the earliest real tangible memory that I had the sensation of, like, and I knew that I was 5, and like, and as it goes as long as 11 with one incident that felt like I was maybe 13. And I'm not, you know, certain on the age on that, but it's the way you know how when you're in a dream and someone's face is there that's not the person's face, but you know who it is.
Yes.
It's kind of like that with age and deep lot logistics.
Yeah.
You can't technically prove that you were a certain age, but you have a sense that I know I was 8, I know I was 9, I know I was this. So there's elements of memory that are like that. Then there's visual memory. And I have a photographic memory. So memories that I can access that my brain hasn't protected me from, I can never lose those images. Mm. They stay forever. So I have very, very, very heavy images now in my mind forever. But the transformation process came as a result of feeling gratitude that this could have come back at any point in my life. And I would probably not be sitting here to talk to you today, because I probably would have ended my life. I probably would have gone through with my attempts on my life. I probably would have committed suicide, because it was so dark. It was the stuff that you hear about on the news and you see in documentaries and horror films, and it does not happen to people that you know, and it does not happen to you. So I'm sitting there, I'm on the couch, and there's tears streaming down my face, and I look at my doctor and I'm just like, no, I help children. I help children who have been through sexual abuse. I'm not, that didn't happen to me. I'm what? Like, I couldn't. And I was just heartbroken. I was just like, I was seeing this little girl who looks like me and sounds like me, and it's happening to her, and I don't understand. Like, my brain couldn't integrate it. And it took, you know, a lot of work and going through. And because I learned that you're in control of your healing, I was like, let's go. Let's heal. Let's do whatever it takes. I was like, five sessions a week, 90-minute sessions. I was like, my doctor's like, okay, we need to calm down. I'm like, no, I got this. Okay, so it's going to be really terrible. And I'm totally cool with that, because I've like been through terrible shit. And we're just going to like get in there and just like mantra these trigger words, and like until the body goes through it, and like, and I'm going to be good. And she's like, okay, but like, as your doctor, I really have to calm you down and recommend. I'm like, no, it's okay. I do this all the time. I work with kids who are victims of sexual abuse. I can do this. We're gonna be. And it was just, it was one, you know, I would get, you know, empowered, and you know, I was like, I would get fueled up. I'm going to go through. And then I'd have a terrible thing. And I'm like, and I like to say that, you know, I found compassion, and that's what got me out of this. Does not start with compassion. It starts with homicidal feelings of like, I want to murder this person. Like, you go through stages. Like, you know, we're not kumbaya. You know what I mean? Like, we were human. We feel emotions. And what I learned from this was how beautiful emotions were, because I'd never felt them. My doctor said, in her entire practice, in all of her years treating women, and she only works with women who were victims of domestic and sexual abuse, she said not one of her clients had ever needed so EMDR can use lights with the eyes, or can use buzzers, and that'll activate both sides of the body. So I opted for the buzzers so my eyes could be closed, and it still moves my eyes with the buzzing. She said no client in the history of her practice had ever asked for the buzzers to be turned so high. I had asked her to turn them basically all the way up to what was the highest setting of 9. And then I asked her to go higher, and she said, I can't, they don't go any higher. So she told me this about 6 months later. She's like, your skin sensation was so numb.
Wow.
Because that's how your brain protected you. It numbed you out. And I,
wow,
that's why I cut. That's why I to wanted feel sexual. Something. I wanted to feel something. Something. I felt dead. I was walking around and I felt like a dead person. Like, you could hit me. I could be bleeding. I'd be like, like, I didn't have the correct sensation for pain, because pain was so unsafe as my little self of what was happening to me. My brain just did what it needed to do to protect me. But then I couldn't feel. I remember years of not being able to cry and acting. Like, I, as an actress, I could cry, but as Annalyn, I could not. It was the most surreal thing. I would go into a scene that was emotional and cry for a character just to have the experience of crying, because everything felt so bottled up and stuffed inside me. And it's so toxic. It's poison inside of us. It's the worst thing for our nervous system. It's the worst thing. It's dis-ease in the body. It's disease. It creates it. And it's horrible. Toxic stress is the single worst thing you can do to your body. And we live in it constantly, all day long, in the perceived threat of life and death. That the lion is here, the invisible lion is here to eat me, and I'm going to die. And what happens? We shut down our digestive system. It doesn't process food, so food rots in our gut. Like, all of our energy goes to our fists to you know, hit, our legs to run. One of the sensations that I was telling my doctor that I wanted help with, I had started to notice, and I never noticed it. So I clearly was on the journey towards healing. So I must have thawed out a little bit from my frozen state. I was literally frozen. I'm like, don't let them see. I'm like, that was me. Like, don't, like, hide away in your ice castle and freeze yourself in, because no one's gonna know. And I had clearly gotten a little bit more in touch with my body, because I had started to notice that my legs go numb when I'm in bed with a new partner. Mm. And my doctor's like, yeah, that's weird. And I'm like, it is kind of weird, isn't it? She's like, yeah, no, it is weird. Mm. It is not normal. And I'm like, it's the first time I'm hearing that it's strange. Like, I'm, oh yeah. Like, I can't sleep through the whole night. I have to take a Xanax or do something, like, you know, take CBD, take anything, like, or I just lay awake the whole night. Wow. And especially if they're like, hugging, you know, hugging me, and I feel like that I'm like constrained. Oh, like just rotating my ankles. That's the only relief I would get from the sensation. I would rotate my ankles over and over again. And this energy was trapped. My doctor was like, you were trying to run. Hmm. Why would your legs be full of so much energy that they would literally have to go numb? Like, the cells were freezing over, full of this trapped energy. And so I started somatic experiences, which Benjamin Fry, the neuroscientist I mentioned who authored The Invisible Lion, he talks about that, because he had a very similar experience to me, and it came out through somatic experience and breath work, and that was when his healing became, and it helped him as a, you know, as a practitioner, obviously. And but I started doing breath work. I started finding all these things to you know, you don't just go to a doctor, you don't just get a pill, you have to do the work. And that's the part that it's not fun. I approach it with a mentality of, this is a challenge and it's not going to beat me, and I'm going in. My doctor's like, you're like the runs into the burning building. And she's like, we don't really need to run into the burning building today. But I'm like, let's go. Let's just run into the burning building. We might find something. She's like, but it's burning. Do you want to just cool off a little? But we, and it's different strokes for different folks, and we find our way. But the more you know that the way past this is through it, and that safety is on the other side, and you start to affirm that, the more you're excited to run into that building, because you know you're actually, this is all a virtual reality. It's not real. It's not happening anymore. It was real at one time, and you validate that part of yourself. But you say, this was a girl I used to know. This is not me now. The me now, I'm the woman I needed. My little girl self needed an Annalyn to come and get her. So that's what I did. I went inside my brain and I created an army of Annalyns, because it's my brain and I can do whatever I want inside there. And I was like, let's have 30 Annalyns. I bet no one's going to mess with me if I got 30 Annalyns, because 30 Annalyns is a lot of storm. So I come in with my army of Annalyns into my memories, and we start picking up my little cells. And I'm like, let's go. We're getting out of here. Not safe for you to be here. And we're going out. We're going to a new decade. It's exciting and cool. And your dreams came true. You became that actress that they said you couldn't be. And it's really cool. You want to come with me? Let's go. And I started to build a relationship with myself.
It's beautiful.
I started to build a relationship with this little girl inside me who had been enslaved for all these years. And I gained her trust. beautiful. Never trusted me because I hurt her a lot.
Yeah.
Because I believed all the lies about her. This innocent, beautiful little girl. And I believed that she was gross and that she was yucky and that, you know, unless someone was having sex with her, that she didn't deserve any love and she didn't deserve to be seen. And unless someone was taking from her or using her or whatever she had to give, it was always transactional. Mm. And it's something that, for me, I see these transactions of women and girls and boys and men who are human beings being sold as commodities. And it just keeps reminding me of how I felt like I was a transaction. I just want you to approve of me. I just want you to love me. Okay, well, here's what I'm going to take from you so that you can have my love. Here's what I'm going to use. Here's how I'm going to use you. And then you can get my love for this amount of time until I want to use you again. And how many of us have felt that way?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's abuse. You can be someone who likes to cook and someone just takes advantage of you and eats your food and never eat it. I mean, pain is pain. We get hurt. It just hurts. And a child doesn't know the difference. And for me, I want everyone to know that while you're up there in your adult brain, up at the top of the stairs, making all that sense and logic, there's a little kid at the bottom of the stairs saying, but why? Why don't you just love me for me?
Yeah.
Why am I not enough? And then we're like, well, here's why you're not enough. Technically, you need to be a success. And it's like a little kid inside there just constantly asking for you to just say, no, today you're enough.
Yeah.
And even if we're able to do that for one day, just one moment in a day, make a shift, make a change. Say, you know what? Where I would normally lie, I'm going to tell the truth. Where I would normally play along and agree, I'm going to state my disagreement, and I'm going to do it kindly, but I'm going to be in my own truth and my authenticity. Mm. And be true to that kid one moment in a day and start to see your life change. Because little child becomes your guide. I go in my mind and I check in. I'm like, is everybody okay in here? There's a lot of them. There's a lot of me in there. And I'm like, well, I'll see my 6-year-old self very clearly in my mind now because I do meditations for this inner child. I told you I do the inner child workshops and I lead inner child meditations. And I'll go in and I'll check in. I'll be like, and she comes running to me and she always has cotton candy. This is the funniest thing ever. At one point during my treatment, she was happy, really happy. And she showed up from the future with cotton candy. I don't know. She'd been time traveling. She was doing all kinds of things. And I'm like, my sister's like, you sound psychotic. And I was like, I know, totally, right? Anyway, so then my little self comes back from the future where she was traveling to. And she's like, no, this sounds really bad, Alan. You can't tell people this.
I do this all the time. So
okay. I'm on a podcast. You have 16 million downloads.
All good. Like, all
now
good.
You all know I'm crazy. No, but it literally, it's so, it, to me, what's crazy is, we know if we want a friendship, if we want a connection, what do you have to do? You have to talk to the person, you see the person, yeah. You respond to the person. And then we have this person inside us that we never talk to and we never respond to. And
we talk to them, but we're so mean.
Yes, yeah. Or we just destroy them constantly with this outer talk. But it's even, you know, like in Mindsight and Dr. Dan Siegel talks about that attuned communication. Mm. Like we're talking above their head, like, you know, we're saying things about them while they're literally listening and we don't acknowledge that they're even there. Mm. And that's how that's what it was like inside me. And that's how I started to see my little self. I was like, I'm making her invisible.
Wow.
No one has made me insignificant. I am significant. I never believed it. Mm. So I saw everywhere outside myself how insignificant I was. And the moment that I started to make her significant, well, the moment when I'm like, hey, am I doing okay? To my little 6-year-old self. And she's like, shows me the cotton candy, which means good. Cotton candy means good things in my psyche. That metaphor, whatever, is just like, you can't be upset when you have cotton candy.
True.
So if she's got cotton candy, I know we're good. If the cotton candy's not there, I'm like, what'd I do? Did I let something slip? Was I not being true to myself? But it's kind of this whole journey has been... it's a return to love. I remember when my little brother Jonathan was born, and I walked in the room. And
my little brother is called Jonathan as well.
Really? Oh, he's a little angel. He's 5 years old, and he's so wonderful. And he's just the apple of my eye forever. But when he was born, I had gotten on a red eye, and I flew. Like, he was born early, and I got there. I was like, I get to the hospital, and we're waiting for him to come. And I walk in the room, and there he is. And I just start bawling my eyes out, and I'm like, why am I crying? And I was in the presence of pure love.
Yeah.
And I never felt this pure love except in those moments when I was in Cambodia, also moments where you'll see me cry a lot. And I just held this bundle of absolute perfect love. And that's what's inside of us, and that's what we can return to. And it's not, you know, people are like, oh, that's so, like, you know, okay, hugging the trees and stuff. And I'm like, who hurt you that bad?
Yeah.
Because I hated love too, and I get it. I was middle fingers to the sky. Don't fall in love with me. What's wrong with you? Leather spikes, like, motorcycle. Like, that was the world that I wanted to be. I loved that I was dark, and what's wrong with these light people? And it was so scary. It was so scary to be love, because that had been used against me. And now it's been my journey home. So I started sending compassion. I started doing compassion meditations and metta meditation. May you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be free from suffering. And I was sending that to the person who did this to me as a child. And it was hard sometimes, and it was beautiful other times, and I felt my whole just being alive sometimes, and other times I gotta see this person as the little boy that he was, who never would have hurt anybody, just like my little brother, made of pure love. And then what happened in this system, this flawed system of cyclic abuse continuation through the generations, like how it cycles and cycles. Like, we have to go to the root of this issue. You cannot treat the symptoms. That's what we do in this world. We treat the symptoms. We have to go to the root cause. And we have such an opportunity to do that when we look inside. Because everything starts and ends with us. And this, the love storm, this kind of transition was my storm transmuting into love. It was like, I'm not giving up the storm, because I am a storm and I am happy with that. But let's make the storm
about love.
And
it's beautiful.
And then I get to be true to that little fierce little child inside me who's also got cotton candy.
That's beautiful. So today we have 2020, the year 2020.
Yeah.
What does a day today look like in your life? So you wake up, how do you feel? How is your inner talk today? Get me in there for a moment.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. It's really funny you asked it on this day particularly, since the Oscars were last night. So this morning I woke up at 5 a.m. And I'm an early riser, but that was pretty early. I tend to try to go back to sleep. But I woke up at 5 a.m. and the super moon is coming through my window, so beautiful. And I just had this incredible night at the Oscars after parties, and like connecting with someone who I hadn't seen in years, and just the potential of our collaboration was just magic. And I did something that I used to do when I was a little girl this morning. And I do this a lot, but I hadn't done this particular exercise. But in honor of the Oscars and Billy, who literally is this actor that I worked with, but Billy Zane, but he also was from Titanic, which was like one of my childhood favorite films. And it was the reason I wanted to be an actress.
Wow.
And he's having this incredible conversation that I'm just feeling like I'm in the clouds. And I woke up this morning, I'd had these crazy kind of wild dreams, and I was in this very emotional state of just sending compassion once again to this person who had hurt me, because the dreams were about him, and it's very kind of like transitory place that I'm in now, where I'll see him and I I, in my dreams, I don't allow him. He doesn't, I have boundaries now, and he'll try to come in, and I don't let him into my world. And I'm an adult now. I'm not in this child energy. And it's a very intense kind of dream. And I always kind of start my day off with the meditation and, you know, like open my eyes and what am I grateful for? Like immediately. So I started saying, I'm grateful for this dream. I'm grateful for last night. It was so amazing. And I look up and I see the moon. I'm like, I'm grateful for the moon. I'm like, you know, to, and then I was just like, I started writing something and I just started saying my Oscar speech.
Wow.
And I used to do it when I was a little girl. I used to stand in my room and I would say, I would like to thank da, 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 da. And I would do it over and over again. Like, and the way Joe Dispenza talks about, Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about being in the
future
and calling it to now. And I mean, I went through all the emotions. I was so emotionally exhausted, actually. I was like, wait, did I get the Oscar? Wait, I feel like I should have it. I'm still kind of in the hair because I shaved my hair from last night and the eyelashes, I'm not going to lie. But I'm like, wait, do I have an Oscar? Oh, no, wait.
Where is it?
Where is it? it was such a beautiful thing because I hadn't let myself go there.
But this is, I love this exercise.
Yeah.
I love it. I think everyone should like do their own Oscar gratitude speech.
The thing I recommend, because it fits with any different vocational skill or whatever industry, do an interview. Mm. Do a post interview or do your New Year's gratitude for the year you just had that hasn't happened yet. Yeah. So I have one friend who's she's very like, this is the real world and this is how things are. And I was like, Allie, I want you to just amuse me. Like, you've done acting classes before. She had done acting classes in Toronto like years ago, and she ended up in PR and working in that. And we connected with my work with 90210 and stuff. And so we're sitting upstairs on my roof deck, and I'm like, it was literally like the first week of 2020. And I said, okay, it's January 6th, let's say. 2021. She's like, wait, I'm like, just go with me. It's January 6th, 2021. You've had a lovely week of holiday. You've just gotten back. What happened last year? How was 2020 for you? And she's like, this is silly. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no. You're a friend, me, who's crazy, and I will literally win, so I don't know why you're fighting me, because I'm going to push you into what I want you to do, because I can kind of be a bully, but always for a good cause. And she's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're making me do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, just do it. And this is our relationship. And so she's like, okay, I made a lot of money. I was like, okay, how much did you make? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, you do. It already happens. Yeah. keep pushing. And she went into it and she came back. She went and told her sister about it. Her sister loved it. She came back and she was like, that was what, that made me feel so good. Yeah. 'Cause she started to get into it. Yeah. So this is, now I have a new dream that you can maybe share. We can share together, which I haven't shared with anyone. I shared with a couple of my friends, but mine as well. We're talking about dreams and manifesting things. So it's my dream to use my acting technique to create workshops where, and I'll incorporate the inner child thing that I already do, but to create built out workshops where people, I teach them with acting technique, how to do what Dr. Joe Dispenza does.
That's
like
amazing.
Acting as if. And you come to me like, I'm not having you come here to be you. I'm creating a character for you and you have to be a good actor. And then we pair off, we have partners, and the partner will tell
That's
you,
amazing.
Oh, I believe this part of your story. But then I kind of wasn't sure you weren't fully connected to this and like really teach them about emotions from
That's
the acting
amazing.
Standpoint. And then they get to build their future. Yeah. So
That's
you,
amazing.
You're my accountability partner.
Yeah,
now
perfect. I will be there on this workshop. I
okay,
love
good.
It. Yeah, I love it. That's amazing.
It's
a great idea.
I want to make people's dreams come true because I'm so thankful for mine. And I'm so thankful
It's amazing.
That I have little, you know, there's 40.3, we say this at the Love Storm, we have 40.3 million dreamers whose dreams cannot come true until we do something. And I want to be a part of making their dreams come true. And I know freedom is a part of their dream. And that's a dream that everyone should have. No one should have to dream about freedom. They should have that.
Yeah.
It's a human right.
So regarding the human trafficking, one thing we can do is do the healing in ourselves and free this inner child we all have locked up in some way.
The inside out, yes.
And what else can we do, like, once we heal that inner child? And, like, from all the knowledge you have now, from traveling to Cambodia, from working as a president of the organization, what is something, if someone really says, I want to get into this, I really want to get involved, for someone who's listening, what would you say? How can they be part of this or help or support?
Well, first of all, thank you. If that is your desire, I'm very grateful to you and your heart. And you, what I've learned from my experience is just start the ball rolling with your inner child. Mm. And you can find freedom together. You can fight this issue and you can find freedom for yourself, and you can do it simultaneously.
Yes.
You just make sure that you are putting that oxygen mask on yourself first, right?
Yeah.
That's just the key. But you can then reach over and put someone else's mask on right away. It's okay. It's okay. So that part is so important, and it is a huge element. But we do need the tangible side, right? We do need to raise the funds and have the boots on the ground and raise the awareness. And it depends on your heart. It depends on what you're compelled to. For me, my heart is the planet. So I work in the international community with human trafficking. You might have a heart for your country or your city or your community. So what the Love Storm is looking to do is connect the dots between the global conversation and local boots on the ground organizations, so that people really have a network of anti-human trafficking organizations that they can get involved with in their own town, to the towns that we're coming to visit. And we're adding cities by the minute. Like, people will reach out to us. We're like, we have a network, we have a venue. I'm like, if you have a place and you have, you know, a network, we'll come to you. We want this message out there, and we're, you know, the synergy is there. But so on the Love Storm, actually on thelovestorm.com, you can join the movement, and you can tell us if you want to be a part of the committee or a creator or a connector. If you want it in your city, you can petition to put it in your city. But we can also, you can get more involved in that capacity, and we can get you connected to organizations that are doing this work that we
know.
And again, it's obviously, fighting anti-trafficking is a little more, you know, there's a little bit more of a time investment when it comes to volunteer stuff than perhaps, you know, coming to a homeless shelter and where, you know, you can't just spend 3 weeks in a center. You know, you have to be educated on how to work with victims of severe trauma and what the, you know, issues are. And tends to be a bigger volunteer commitment a lot of times. But you can get involved in your own city. You can raise awareness. You can raise funds. You can do campaigns. We have the opportunity for personal fundraisers if people want to get involved with Together One Heart. We can create personal fundraiser pages for them.
It's amazing.
So there's so many options, and I can give you all of the links for everything.
Perfect. Yeah, I will put everything in the show notes.
Thank
so
you.
For everyone who wants to get into it.
Yeah,
so that's amazing.
But yeah, it's. I think the biggest thing is we're in that position where so many people know about it now, which is amazing, but we still need to blow the horns a little bit louder. So our awareness builders are crucial right now. Mm-hmm. People who are sharing at a dinner table, sharing at your meditation center or your church or your mosque or your synagogue or wherever your community, you know, you find yourself in your community, just talk. Something we can do all day long.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me on the podcast to be able to talk about this, because this is how people find out.
I'm happy to give the space. So, And I have one last question I ask every of my podcast guests, okay? So imagine we do the future thing.
Okay, yes.
So imagine, because I also always do the interview with the future self. I love it. Imagine we meet on the last day of your life in the far, far, far future. So you had a beautiful life. You're, I don't know, 110, beautiful. And everything came true. You solved the human trafficking problem. Amazing world out there.
Yeah.
A lot of inner child's healed.
Yeah.
And I would come to you and I would tell you, Annalyn, there was a little problem. So sorry, but everything you wrote, your website, it's all down. It's like it's gone.
It's
so sorry. But I would give you a white sheet of paper and a pen. And they would tell you, if nothing else from everything you've done is left in this world, but you could write down on this paper three wisdoms you want the world to remember, what would you write down?
Well, first of all, I love you. And where are you from? And I don't think it's Germany or even planet Earth. You're from the stars. What a beautiful question. The three wise adages or whatever my own, I guess I would say, you are the child. No matter how tall, no matter how aged, no matter how many years, who you truly are is the child. Love that child would be number two. And you'll change the world. Number three.
It's beautiful.
Because if 7.6 billion people love that child, we don't have any more pain.
That's true.
It all goes away.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thank you
what
so
an
much.
Ending. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I put everything in the show notes for everyone to connect with you. Is there anything else you would like to share or to say? Anything?
I would just like to say, ich liebe dich. Liebe dich auch.
Thank you so much, really. And I really,
so
really
grateful.
Want to acknowledge you for being so pure, so real, so committed to your own healing path, because I think the world needs more people to show up for their own healing, because it's so hard and
yes.
It's so difficult, and
it's so easy to do it outside.
Yeah, and like most of the people don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could really tell you went deep into
yeah.
that healing, and it's so inspiring, and it's so yeah. I just really want to acknowledge you for this, because I can just imagine what a way this is, and also for everything you do for all these girls in the world. And I really, really appreciate it, and I'm really grateful for that conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass du ganz viel aus dieser Folge für dich mitnehmen konntest und dass sie dich auch nochmal dazu inspiriert hat, da tiefer zu gehen, in dich zu schauen und ja, da wirklich in diese innere Arbeit zu gehen, denn nur wenn du dich in deiner inneren Welt wirklich befreist und heilst, dann kannst du auch im Außen das wahrnehmen, was du dir wirklich wünschst. Und das meistens unser Schmerz im Innen, ja, das ist, was wir auch im Außen in der Welt sehen. Und wenn du da gerne noch tiefer gehen möchtest, in der Rise Up and Shine Uni haben wir eine gesamte Woche, wo wir uns mit dem Thema innere Kindheilung befassen, Vergebungsarbeit loslassen, die Vergangenheit hinter sich zu lassen, sie zu heilen und kraftvoll in der Gegenwart und in die Zukunft zu gucken und wie du wirklich deine Geschichte, deine Vergangenheit für dich sein lassen kannst und nicht mehr gegen dich. Also wenn du da gerne tiefer gehen möchtest, dann freue ich mich, wenn wir uns in der Rise Up and Shine Uni sehen. Da geht es vor allen Dingen auch darum, wie du lernst, kraftvoll zu manifestieren. Und dazu gehört es eben, dass du deine gesamte Power, deine gesamte Energie wieder zu dir zurückholst. Und den Link zur Rise Up and Shine Uni findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes. Und ich freue mich jetzt unendlich, wenn wir uns bei Instagram hören, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und du mir deine Gedanken da lässt zu dieser Folge. Fühl dich von Herzen umarmt, lass es dir gut gehen, pass auf dich auf. Du bist wichtig, du bist wertvoll und du bist ein Licht für diese Welt. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.